And so when all is said and done, he tells us, as Jonathan Edwards says, a man never in any instance wills anything contrary to his desires or desires anything contrary to his will. Right? Another way to put this, he tells us, is that we act in a way that seeks to preserve our self-interest. Right? We will make contrary choice only if the antecedent factors lead to a sufficient motive that appeals to our own self-interest and inclinations, right? And, you know, the issue is, well, is there anything wrong with this, right?
And I really like this example. So choosing based on this natural self-love is reflected in what? The golden rule.
Yeah.
Self-interested love is built in preservation mechanism that drives our decision-making, and Jesus and Paul acknowledges. Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you.
Right.
Talking about both aspects and that desire that, well, we would want to be pleased, and this is the path and direction we would want someone to do. You know, even if it's, I would want someone to cook me a meal, but I want them to ask me first. So I should want them to ask, not just show up randomly when the house is
and
a
so
mess.
And so I should do that to them. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
On the other hand, our sense of self-preservation is often caught between conflicting motives. We are compelled to choose the lesser of two evils. I don't want to give this thug, this robber, all my money, but I then really don't want the .45 caliber he's pointing at my head to expel all my brain matter on the sidewalk. So I will reluctantly give the man the money. Right. So there's, I think it's an old Jack Benny joke of your money or your life. And he goes, well, I'm thinking. Decisions are eventually made once a clear and even if slight winner emerges out of the matrix of conflicting and competing motives that battle within.
Right.
And again, I hate to do it, but Austrian economics points to this. We have subjective value, and we all have different subjective values. And economics, this economic system, points to fulfilling those desires in a kind of a sequential order of priority. And and we see even those things reflected in things like economics.
Yeah, exactly. And so he kind of summarizes here to help us to make sure we're with him here. He says, first, we choose what we most want to choose, right? We choose what we most want to choose. Second, what we most want to choose stems from our strongest motives as influenced by various internal and external factors. But third, he says, all moral and spiritual decisions are circumscribed by the spiritual condition of our heart.
Right.
So we, you know, those decisions are based on our heart's condition.
The language of our heart is the anthropology of the Bible that speaks to our basic spiritual and moral nature as human beings. The default position of every person is to be enslaved to a fundamentally corrupt nature at the core of our souls. It wasn't always like that, but this is the world that we operate in. It's the one we're born into. It's the one we are brought up in. It's the one we survive or fail to survive in. It's the one we exist in. In order for us to make choices that have any kind of genuine moral and spiritual value, a radical change must take place within. Boy, I wonder if the Bible talks about that at all. Divine grace must radically renew our corrupt nature so that our hearts are effectually and irresistibly enabled to choose Christ for salvation. The Bible says that I've taken your heart of stone into a heart of flesh. The thing that can't move, I can't get blood from a stone. He makes that stone fleshy so that it can bleed. Thus, regeneration of necessity must precede faith. So regeneration, then faith, making salvation truly and wholly a work of grace.
Right. So we're saved by grace through faith. That's what Ephesians chapter 2, right, says, right? It's not of ourselves. It is a gift of God.
The golden chain of redemption in Romans 8 there.